It's okay. It's okay. He won't hurt us. He would have killed me by now. Okay? I think it's because we're not actually part of the movie. He doesn't really know what to do with us.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast. This is episode number 59. With me today is...
Oh, we're going back to me now?
Yeah.
Oh, hi, I'm Luke.
And?
No, none. I mean, Ralph.
Yeah, and I am Oscar, the host of the show. And what we do typically at another movie podcast is that we review three... We do three in-depth reviews of three titles, usually recent films. We have three recent films for you today. Two of them are in theaters. One of them is out on VOD for rental and or purchase. That one is Borg versus McEnroe. McEnroe? I forgot how they say it.
McEnroe.
The tennis movie. And today's reviews will also include a movie called Searching, starring, what's the guy's name?
Come on.
From Star Trek.
Come on, you got it. You got Star this. Trek. I have faith in you.
I don't remember. But Searching. But it's a thriller movie. Watch it.
Thriller.
Oh, the guy from...
What? What are you going to say?
Please say the same movie he just said.
Please say it. Oh, please.
Oh, he's in the Star Trek movie,
yeah.
Right?
He just said that.
I know. It's the Kumar and... Harold and Kumar. There we go.
Yeah.
Oh, is he? Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that movie since it came out.
Dude, that's all I thought about.
Oh, okay. And we'll also be reviewing the latest of the Conjuring series, novelettes, sequels, prequels, whatever they're called.
John Cho.
The Nun. Johnny Cho?
John Cho.
Got it. Cool. Anyway, we're reviewing the horror movie The Nun as well today. You can find our show and every other show we've ever done over at our website, otherpodcast.com. That's where you can find everything we have for our marathons. We're going to get into a little marathon talk here before we get to our first review. We also have our bonus episodes there, typically. And today's, this month's bonus episode, if you're so inclined to know, for September is going to be The Predator, which I'm positive none of you guys are excited about, but I'm a little excited about it. Anyone excited for it or no?
I can get a $4 ticket to see it through T-Mobile.
I can watch it for free with my AMC Stubs thing.
That's not the question I asked, though. Are you guys excited?
I'm justifying my way to see it.
I'm not saying if you are willing, right, or able to see it.
I always have been interested in the Predator / Alien franchise.
Even when they combine them?
Even when they combine them. I was so looking forward to it, but I've been let down many times that I go with hesitation.
Okay.
I'm going regardless, but I'm going with hesitation.
That's exactly my feelings on it, and I figure I wanted more of a fun movie.
You usually pick boring movies.
Not usually, and not always.
Yeah, no, it's not usually. It's pretty much dead on.
Oh, really? So, Solo, Aladdin.
So,
Red Sparrow. No, wait. I wouldn't agree with that.
I'll just fuck you with
Alien that. From, like...
Black Panther.
Blanther.
Blanther. What?
I don't know. I've never seen Predator.
Let me get through this. Okay. You're just stalling us now. So The Predator is this month's bonus episode. The bonus that came out 5 months ago, for those that didn't donate, is going to be Isle of Dogs, which Luke and I...
Yeah, I saw it when I was in Palm Springs.
Yeah, have done. So check that out, again, over at our website, otherpodcast.com. Now, we also talk about recent discoveries, so let's get into that right now. Recent discoveries is where we, you know, communally talk about the films or whatever that we watched in our spare time between shows. Luke, you have nothing for us today.
No.
What? I swear to God, if it's a joke, okay, I'm going to throw the mic at you. Raph, you have a movie, though, and I assume this is the latest version of this movie. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. What is that movie?
This is The Mummy.
Mm-hmm.
The 2017 version, directed by Alex Kurtzman.
And, the guy who did the Fringe show?
Sure. And starring Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is useless, like Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a movie called The Mummy. And I didn't expect where this was going, I guess. I thought it was going to be more... I thought it was like them uncovering what they did, right? But it wasn't like this whole curse thing. I didn't expect the curse thing, I guess. Which was, I thought was kind of cool. Other than that, I mean, I like how they embraced... I think this is what current era movies are doing now. They're embracing, like, if we're going to do this, we might as well embrace that the world itself we're in you know, embraces like other cultures, other crazy lores and stuff like that, like the Jekyll and Hyde thing going on.
Okay, I see what you're trying to say.
Like in King Kong, they embrace the Godzilla is in the King Kong universe and stuff like that.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this is a new era where we're embracing.
Not all, but some.
But some.
Some are doing it. Yeah.
Some are doing it, yes.
Okay, I see what you're putting down.
So that was an interesting thing as well. Smooth. Very smooth.
Operator.
Uh-huh. Other than that, I mean, it was dumb action at best.
What did you think of? So when this movie came out, was it last year or the year before?
2017.
Okay. The only thing I liked about it or loved about it was that one airplane scene.
It was a really cool scene.
It wasn't that badass, the way they filmed it. They actually went up, did a thing on a simulation thing. I don't know what they did. Like made a fake prop. It looked really cool.
Yeah. Well, the movie was trying to be too much. It wanted to be comedic, like the original Mummy, the original remake Mummy was.
The Brendan Fraser
one. But that worked because Brendan Fraser just has a funny face.
Yeah, and that movie that was different overall. It was more adventure. This one was trying to separate action with like some horror a little bit in there.
It was like action horror comedy.
Yeah.
They're trying to alleviate moments in the movie with comedic themes, right?
Yeah.
And some of it works, but sometimes you're just like, eh.
Do you want to see more movies of this dark universe or no?
I mean, I wouldn't mind. I could see where you could do anything. That's the cool thing, is the next Mummy.
I hope they're not discouraged to stop because different director, different script could do something
you
better.
You could do anything different. Know. Right, because exactly. They left it wide open. Yeah, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like I said, it wasn't a horrible movie. Right. It wasn't great.
I didn't think it was. Yeah, exactly. That's what I feel.
Yeah. All right.
That's the Mummy came out last year. What did you rent it or what?
Is it on available? HBO.
HBO, okay. Yeah, HBO, you could guess first crack at previous.
Yeah, it was on HBO and I was watching. It just started when I was browsing TV.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I was just like, I could have watched it HBO on demand and I was like, yeah, that's
fine. Right. I saw a Netflix original show called Tau. T-A-U. Tau. Tau. Let me read the description here. A woman is held captive by a scientist in a futuristic smart house and hopes to escape by reasoning with the artificial intelligence that controls the house. And yes, the AI's name is Tau.
Oh, yeah. I have this in my queue.
Oh, yeah. You do?
I do.
I do overall recommend it. Written by Noga Lanthau and directed by Federico D'Alessandro, which I think I know that name. Oh, Gary Oldman plays the voice of the artificial intelligence, just so you know. It's Green and Maika Monroe are the two other players. It's really just a two-person place. It's all one house, the entire movie. You know, it's very simple. Obviously futuristic, so they did spend some money in digital effects and whatnot. So it's not like it's a cheap movie either. So this movie is it has some leaps and bounds. It does stretch your suspension of disbelief a little bit. Not just because like she's stuck in this house being experimented on to make like a, we don't okay. The sins of the movie are unfortunately a lot. And for example, like the main guy who kidnaps her that has that forces the AI to keep her there is inventing something. He's like an inventor. He's on the brink of doing something amazing.
Okay.
You never know what it is. You never know what it's for. You also get very little out of him as a person. And he's actually the movie actually goes extra harder into making you realize that making you not know anything about him and making him feel robotic. So that way, I guess you have no sympathy at all. Where I think that was a mistake. And if the movie did anything to put us in his perspective at all, or just show us something about him that was, you know, human, the movie would have worked better because the whole movie is just really plainly black and white. And I feel the movie has a lot of missteps because of that.
Okay.
But convincing Tau, this AI who is living in this house under the control of this man, it was generally pretty fun to watch. And you get some sympathy for the AI and everything. It's just a house that talks to you.
Okay.
You know, she's like basically warming her way into his good graces, the AI's good graces in a way. And then it has some good stuff at the end. I wish the ending was a little more harder on its characters than it turned out to be. I'm not spoiling it for you. But other than that, it was a fun watch. Not a great watch or anything, but it's a fun watch. Tau on Netflix. So check that out. Here's another one for you. Anyone seen the Sharp Objects show? It's a miniseries. It's gone. It's 80 episodes or six. I forget. Six or eight. It stars Amy Adams. and Patricia Clarkson. No one's heard of it?
No.
Okay.
Because this is a movie podcast, why would we talk about shows? But yeah,
you still can hear about it.
No, not really.
You're worse than a wife, passive aggressive.
Talking about movies.
I'm talking about a show. A reporter confronts the psychological demons from her past when she returns to her hometown to cover a violent murder. And I said who started already. The guy who directed the one with Nicole Kidman from last year is escaping me right now. But the writers are Gillian Flynn, who wrote Gone Girl. You know, everyone knows her for that.
Oh, that's a good one.
Dark Places. What was that other one? There's another one.
Doesn't she have, like, a movie coming out right now?
I think so. She has quite a few projects in the works. And this movie actually got screening.
She's got the
movie review podcast got screeners for this movie.
She's got Widows coming out.
Widows. Is that hers?
Mm-hmm.
Is it really hers?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. No wonder there's so much buzz around it.
And Steve McQueen.
Yeah, that's Steve McQueen also, but I'm saying it's buzz because Gillian Flynn has this show, which everyone...
What else is about. The one that was recorded, they were shooting that one by our house?
Is that the one?
That was the one, okay. The one with Colin Firth in it.
Colin Firth and... I forgot all the other actresses. Anyway, bunch of people in the movie.
Right. All these females, but no, we don't know.
No, that Rodriguez girl. What's her name?
Yeah,
from Michelle.
Michelle Rodriguez, thank you. And then Viola Davis, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And see, I'm remembering. Yeah. Shut up.
Who gave Michelle Rodriguez a role outside of Fast and the Furious?
Well, Resident Evil also. That was before that.
That's okay. They cut her off of the first one.
Thank God.
Yeah, and also Lost. She was handsome Lost. Remember that guy?
I just do not like her as an actor.
I don't think she's actress. Very great actress. But she can work in some situations. Girlfriend's great. I think she's great in... doesn't matter. Why are we talking about Michelle Rodriguez?
A trailer?
Okay. A trailer also, right. So this show is fucked up, guys. You guys want to see something really fucked up?
No.
But also not... But it's more like a feels fucked up.
Are you going to show us your
penis again? I already said no.
Again? You haven't seen it. Anyway, Sharp Objects, settle down. Sharp Objects is about this reporter who goes back to her hometown, right, to cover the murder of this really small, I think in Missouri, I'm not sure where. And the place mirrors very greatly to a small town. It does a really good job of it. Every acting in this movie and the cinematography and the sound design and some of the song choices in it, very clever, very, like... meticulous.
Mm-hmm.
Very meticulous. You can feel the movie is very carefully plotted out all the way to its very detail. The movie plays with memory, the miniseries plays with memory the same way the tale does. Or the same way we thought of the tale, how it played with memories. Okay. It does the same way. Like something on the floor will remind her of something from her childhood.
How they're inconsistent.
Right. They're inconsistent. How they brought up by just pure emotion of the moment. And you see just small flashes. Nothing really long. At all. So it's not quite like the tale, but because the tale focuses on just one event, kind of, or one person's, but this is an entire town's worth of childhood. Mm-hmm. But this is really good. And Amy Adams is this woman who is a cutter, who used to be a cutter, I guess, and, you know, and she, you know, has clothes to hide it and things like that, and has to pretend to not, you know, be a work, a functioning alcoholic to figure out this thing and, you know, appease her editor and whatever, and be a journalist while dealing with the horrible childhood that she was raised in and her horrible mother. Who plays by Patricia Clarkson, and she fucking nails it. The mother is super odious, unbelievable, but totally believable, and it's horrendous to watch her. But all it is just words. It's not a horror movie, guys. And it's but I recommend it highly. It's so really taut and tense all the time. So I recommend it. Sharp Objects, it's hella good. Great ending, has a twist ending. I'll say that now. Cool. And the other thing I saw was AMC's The Terror. Which is based on the a real life problem. 1800s, I think. These two ships, U.S. The Terror and the Erebus, were sailed from Great Britain to discover the Arctic, mm-hmm. and to find a passageway through it. And these two ships were one of the most expensive voyages they ever, you know, did. And a book came out recently on those two ships when they found out evidence, paleontologists, archaeologists, whatever. They found evidence like, oh, this is where they stranded. This because they died. They were gone missing.
Yeah, no
one ever found them.
Yeah.
And it's been like 200 years or whatever.
It's the Antarctic.
And people find, you know, some bodies here and there, but they don't know enough. But there's a book that came out recently where these guys took the novel, these completely just facts and history stuff, and they made a show and they put a supernatural spin to it. Where they say, like, this is what happened by the proof, this is the cold, how they ought to deal with, what they try to, you know, whatever, up until whatever the last time they wrote a log, right? And then the rest, they kind of fill it in with this supernatural Eskimo kind of legend thing going on in the middle of it. And it's really, really badass. It's super atmospheric. You feel as cold as they do sometimes.
Oh, so it's like, what's it called?
Day After Tomorrow.
The Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah, that's our always hook line for that. Yeah. But yeah, there are other movies like that too. But it feels like that. It has different levels of horror, from monster and supernatural horror elements, you know, like violent stuff like that, to, you know, starvation, what that does to crew members and what they lash out and mutiny and all this shit. Scurvy, how scurvy looked like after day.
What does scurvy
after a
look
year?
Like?
You know, well, watch the show.
Is it leprosy?
You have
it's not,
leprosy.
It's not like leprosy.
Dysentery?
Probably dysentery is closer. Dysentery is for the butt, right, mainly.
Why would you know what dysentery looks like when someone has it?
You're asking me or him?
No, him.
Okay.
I don't. That's what I'm asking.
Why are you asking?
Dude, why would you?
Making polite conversation.
Anyway, I recommend it. It's on AMC. Check it out, everyone. It really is top notch. And that's also a one and done kind of thing.
Okay.
So that's what we've been watching. Now let's talk about
what we've been playing.
We've been promising you guys to talk about our last marathon we did. We never had a chance to close it down properly. But what did you guys think of our classics marathon that we did? Remember that 3 shows ago? For those of you who may not remember or new to the show, our marathon.
What were we calling them? Classic originals? Classic
Alpha classics. Yeah, well, we tried our you know, elementary best, really, because we're not all, like, I'm not great at the classics either. Elementary best to pick films that were clear inspirations, or maybe not so clear inspirations, of future films, either technique-wise or story-wise or whatever, or genre-wise, to future movies today that we see and take advantage of and whatever, you know, take for granted, right? And we all picked different films. I think Luke had The House on Haunted Hill, for example. I had The Shop Around the Corner. Ralph, what did you? You had the Rear Window, I think. So what did you guys feel about watching these movies overall? And if you have any regrets or maybe things you would have chosen differently, anything like that?
I would have chosen Spartacus instead of Ben-Hur.
Well, didn't you think that Ben-Hur was Spartacus at the time?
It looks the same.
No, didn't you think that? I'm not saying the
other. It all looks the same.
It's not the same. Didn't you think that, though? Hello, this is a conversation.
So what's the next marathon going to be, Oscar?
That's not what I'm asking.
I plead the fifth.
Why?
Because you're putting him on blast.
That's a fucking question.
Because you're putting him on blast.
Fucking Roth, Jesus.
You mean Judah Ben-Hur?
Yeah,
Ben-Hur.
This guy had a long name. What? I don't want to have a moment of silence, but I liked it. I liked it overall. I got to watch it. I got to watch movies and definitely see the tropes or the flat out
copying
of scenes or even lines in movies to today's standards, to today movies.
Yeah, like a Double Indemnity copying, for example.
Yeah, I definitely saw a lot of that. So that was interesting to watch, especially because you see it where it comes from. And if you've never seen it before, you kind of feel like it's played already, which is weird, but you're watching the original, so it's not played. So, like, how can you call the original played, you know?
What does that say about the trope, you think? Do you think that says a bad thing about movies?
If you see it coming, yes.
Okay.
So, like, if it doesn't fit, sometimes it's like if you see it coming and it doesn't fit, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Then it becomes, it's one of those, like, I guess, almost like a bad trope, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. Mm-hmm. Some are just overplayed, no matter how well it is. You can still appreciate the work, but sometimes, even though it's played well, you just can't appreciate it because it's been so overplayed that you're just like, well, I already saw it coming a mile away, and if that was a twist then, and it had nothing other besides that twist,
yeah.
Like, it's not doing anything new for me. And it's sad to say that, even if it's coming from an original one, that the original one, what's it called? It's sad that you almost can't appreciate it as much.
Yeah.
You have to have, like, almost a different lens, a different viewing aspect.
Yeah.
And that's hard. It's hard to put yourself in that scenario.
That is definitely true. One thing I would regret, though, about a marathon that I wish we did, well, I don't want to say more effort. I want to say any effort, all of us, is that I wish we took a little more notice on the tropes or the guidelines or the things that are familiar from these movies, the original movies, that we don't really realize in modern movies. Like something that doesn't feel like what you're saying, Raf, where like you understand where that's going. You understand this trope. You understand that he's cheating on that girl, whatever. Like you don't understand how the hooks of those things work yet because those are the originals. I'm saying something subtle, maybe something editing, some, I don't know, some trick of the camera or the pacing or the story making that is that we take advantage of, that we don't even notice when we watch the film, that it's that's still inspired other filmmakers to make.
Yeah.
I wish we maybe did more effort on that, but none of us did, obviously. We didn't think of it
until
after. Well,
I just don't think I don't have a trained eye for that either.
I mean, not me.
I mean, I try to catch as much as I could
right.
going watching the first through. I mean, I think if I were to give a movie two shots, you know, two viewings before I got to watch it.
I mean like research. I don't mean like by viewing
it. That's what I'm trying to say, but that would be like the research, I guess.
Yes, yeah, I guess.
It's like to watch it again, I would get more out of it, you know. Yeah. Like I can tell you everything about Back to the Future. Let's talk about that movie. You know, but I can't tell you everything about Rear Window because I've only seen it once.
We should do a Back to the Future marathon.
No.
I don't have to watch the movie, guys.
Here's my next question. Would you guys do another marathon of this ilk?
No, I'm tired of watching old movies.
Okay, Roth?
As long as we know what we're picking, yes. Like Spartacus and Ben-Hur.
Yep.
It's just on you. Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind it. I think we can narrow something more, pinpoint something more, you know, like, more precise to something like more
like
specific.
A certain director?
More specific. I don't know, director. I would say more specific, maybe like a genre or a specific type of trope or something.
Yeah.
Just to stay, because we were kind of all over the place.
Well, I'm not saying again, like soon.
No, I know that. But what I'm saying is if I were to do something again, I would want it to be more specific, not as generalized as we had it. Because we kind of just had it open.
Yeah, we did.
So.
Yeah.
Because you could literally throw a rock at a movie from the 40s and you'd probably make it, oh, yeah, well, this is a remake of this. Like.
Yeah, that's why I'm trying to make it more blatant, where like you clearly see. Like.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
exactly. I think once we start, you know, making it more focus on one thing.
I think we managed to also find all the remakes from the movies, too.
We did. That's kind of what we were pushing. That's why we had the Alpha Classics, because they were the first of the remakes.
Right. I think they all had remakes, I mean, all of them.
If not remakes, clear inspirations
Ben-Hur
from.
Ben-Hur was like the second version out of the three.
Yeah, and, so. But there's a movie that came out 2 years ago, though, Ben-Hur.
Right, so, that's
yeah.
why.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
This is like the middle Ben-Hur.
Right, but still, you know, like I Am Legend is the third of, I mean, the Omega Man is the second one after, it's also the middle. But a lot of people think it's the original because it's Charlton Heston. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Because it's so damn old. And movies from like 50 years ago shouldn't even exist.
Charlton Heston was alive, yes. Or he's still alive now? Is he still alive?
I think he's still kicking?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Anyway.
By cold.
Yes, the cold dead hands. Anyway, so we like to feature marathons because, you know, the obviousness is that we like to review something outside the purview of the now. Recent movies ain't the world. There's more to it. There's a lot of history in there. So without further ado, we're going to get into a little discussion on what's going to be the next one. What?
Heston died 10 years ago.
No, he didn't.
Died April 5th, 2000. Charlton Heston, right?
Yeah, Charlton. Chucky Hest.
Yeah, Charlton Heston died April 5th,
2008. Okay. I don't know.
Cool.
More you know.
Okay. Chucky Hest. Well, that guy was old.
Insert rainbow yep. effect.
Okay, so Luke, what yes. is our... I ask you because you're the one who kind of... I mean, I'm not saying you chose it. You were coerced eventually through long and pointless conversation to finally pick a fucking marathon.
Yes.
And he chose basically the most blatant blockbustery idea ever, but that's fine because I think everyone can relate to it. So what is it?
Okay, so there's this little known director guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I saw a documentary about him. His name is Steven Spielberg. You might have heard of him.
Yeah.
Apparently he's been making movies since like the fucking 70s.
Yeah.
I didn't even know they made movies back then. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is we're going to watch a movie from like the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, we're going to watch one movie. It doesn't matter what decade that we have not seen before.
Of his, yes.
Yes.
Now, directed only. The guy has produced like every other movie on the planet. So
the guy's like involved in everything.
Counting that, okay. So we're just counting pure directing.
Yep.
If you guys find out, I know he co-directed some movies. You could count those too, I guess. I never said.
So, ironically, I'm actually doing, since my movie that I haven't seen is from the 70s, I'm doing like four decades.
Oh, yeah? Oh, nice. Okay, so, Luke said it is perfectly right. It's 80s, 90s, 2000s. Now, obviously, 2000s is 18 years of it. But
I thought we were limited to only up to 2010.
No, just to 2000s, just after 2000.
Well, I got to reevaluate my list.
If you want, but do it right now because we're about to say what we're going to choose, what we chose. So, Luke, what are the films of your list? Now, mention which ones from the 70s, 80s, and which ones the ones you haven't seen.
Mine's actually, I think, in chronological order. So
okay, cool.
Sugarland Express.
Is the one you haven't seen and
from,
the earliest.
From the 70s, okay. Yeah. I think one of his very first ones.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I think it's like right along with Duel. Then we have Empire of the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
Saving Ryan's Private.
Of course. And then the porn version. And the Terminal, right.
Yes.
So that's two Tom Hanks in a row there at the end. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Any particular reason why you chose some of those? Like the one, I know the ones you haven't seen is the one you haven't seen, but...
Right. Well, actually, I have never actually seen the entire Terminal movie.
Okay.
So I kind of want to finish that off.
Okay.
Two birds, one stone, you know?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Empire of the Sun, because I saw that not too long ago.
So you feel like you can coast by that review?
No, I bought it again so I could rewatch it.
Oh, okay.
And then Saving Ryan's Private, just because it's like one of the best war movies I've ever seen.
That I can't argue with that. Actually.
Okay. And what's funny? Huh. I went to buy these movies used, and so I went. I got Empire of the Sun,
uh-huh.
Saving Ryan's Private, and I bought Schindler's List because I don't own it. And I'm like, oh man, this guy's done a lot of war movies.
Yeah, I mean, those three are all war like, setting movies. I don't think Empire of the Sun is a war movie, but it's like about a POW camp or something, right?
Which one?
Empire of the Sun. About,
yeah, well, I'm still around.
Yeah, war. But you're right. It's about war. Yeah, exactly. No, you're
the guy
right.
At the source. Like, oh, you want a Spielberg kiss? I'm like, kinda. Yeah.
Yeah. So go to Raf. Raf, what are your choices here?
Okay, I'll let you decide on which one is you think is the one I haven't seen.
Oh, that's cool. We can do that.
Twilight Zone, the movie.
Mm-hmm. That's the one you haven't seen. Twilight Zone.
Hook, Amistad, and Adventures of Tintin.
Oh shit! Okay, actually, that's harder. That's harder. You haven't seen Amistad.
I've seen Amistad.
Damn.
You just don't remember Amistad.
So but I don't remember Amistad. Okay. So I've seen it. I can start watching it, and I'm pretty sure I'll be like, I see this movie.
Yeah.
But I have seen the movie because I had to see it for school.
I'm going to have an interesting discussion about Amistad.
I've seen Twilight Zone, the movie. That's how I got into Twilight Zone.
Okay. That's interesting. You saw the movie?
I didn't know it was a movie.
Wow, that's such a...
Because I saw the movie first, and I was like... Because I was like, wow, this is a really long episode or whatever. And I was like, oh, it's a movie. And I was like, oh, it's crazy. And I started liking the Twilight Zone.
That's so crazy.
So I've never seen Adventures of Tintin. And of course, I've seen Hook. Like, let's be realistic.
We all grew up.
Yeah, we all grew up seeing Hook, yeah. So, and I've never seen Adventures of Tintin.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's very cool. That's a very cool way to pick them. All right, so mines are, we're going to start with, this is 70s, 80s, whatever, Duel.
Seen it.
Duel is it's so underrated. That's why I picked it. Just
saw
underrated
it
Spielberg.
Last year?
Underrated great Spielberg. And it's called a TV movie, by the way.
It was.
I know, but I'm saying, but back then a TV movie was considered like low rent, actual piece of shit for a lot of people. It's not that. This is one of the rare ones that are really good. And then from the 90s, I got Schindler's List. So there
you
go.
I own it.
Yep, you own it now. From the 2000s, something lighter, Catch Me If You Can. His first and only collaboration with Leonardo DiCaprio, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And also has a very young Amy Adams starting up in movies back then. And then the one I haven't seen is from also 2000, the BFG. The Big Fucking Gun. So I haven't seen it.
Okay, neither have I.
At all.
I have.
Like, I had no interest in seeing it.
I saw the BFG already.
So, and I'm curious about it. And there were others I haven't seen. There were from recent stuff, but... Okay. I was like, that's the best one that looks
I've seen all your movies. By the
way. If I recall, when Duel premiered on TV, George Lucas was at a party, and he was like, oh, I'm just going to sneak away to watch this Duel movie, see what it's about, you know, what this Spielberg guy's got to do.
Yeah.
He ended up was like, he was going to just watch a little bit of it, ended up watching the whole movie. And I think he like ended up like contacting him afterwards.
Oh, shit. And then Indiana Jones is made. None of us picked Indiana Jones, by the way, which is funny.
I was totally going to pick an Indiana Jones movie, and I saw you both didn't, and I was like, I can't do that.
Of course, you couldn't.
I couldn't do it.
I almost didn't because I thought you guys
then
would.
Then I would be the one, oh, you would pick an Indiana Jones movie.
Oh, so you're doing it because of us, really, not because of what
of
you
course.
Want.
You think I want to watch Hook again? No.
You should be able to pick what you want.
You guys should watch that Steven Spielberg documentary on HBO.
Maybe we'll cap it with that. That'd be nice.
I think we should start off with it.
No.
Ooh.
Okay, sure, whatever. I don't care. So, and also, nobody picked any of his alien stuff, really. Not that I can think of, right? No E.T., right? No Close Encounters, no AI.
We did E.T. recently in a, what's it called?
I saw Close Encounters, I think, was this year or last year?
Yeah, we did E.T. in a recent... Didn't we do?
Not us, no. We did the other one.
Which
the,
one?
The Lights Mountain.
Close Encounters?
Close Encounters, thank you.
I thought we did E.T.
No, we did Close Encounters when they re-released it in theaters, right? We reviewed it then, but no.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I rented it. Or...
I could have sworn we did E.T. Maybe it was
positive because I haven't seen 18 years. That's how I would know.
I don't know.
I mean, maybe you guys did. Did you guys do it?
I could have sworn I.
How about this? Customers, check our listeners. Check our archives. Whatever, the same thing, really.
Unless they're EIO archives. Don't arrest.
I haven't seen AI in forever, and I didn't want to pick it because I don't remember if I liked it.
I never seen it.
Which one?
AI. I was this close to picking AI, but I don't remember if I liked it.
It's I like it, but
it was a while ago since I've seen it.
It's been a minute, yeah.
I like Hook.
No War of the Worlds either.
I like Hook, so that's why I picked it.
We're gonna have fun with Hook, Ruff. That movie holds force for me as I think about it.
Oh, I haven't seen it in forever.
I can't wait to see it again, just to see what I think for realsies.
I also remember it's long.
Yeah, it's long. None of it. I mean, I think Catch Me If You Can is short. Duel is short. Schindler's List is not fucking short. Let me tell you a story about Schindler's List.
That's a heavy movie right there.
Yeah, it's a heavy movie. All right, cool. So that's those are our picks. I will update the website to, you know, so you have all these titles there for you guys to watch it with us, and we'll let you know after every show when we're doing it and which one we're doing it. Okay, now we can really for real start on our first review of the evening, which will be The Nun.
I had a series of visions when I was younger. And after each one ended, the same thought would be stuck in my head.
What did you see?
I saw a nun. Word of my visions reached the church, and I was asked to accompany a priest to an abbey in Romania.
The abbey has a long history.
Valak.
Not all good.
What?
She knew you too. Callahan's here.
A priest with a haunted past and a novice on the threshold of her final vows are sent by the Vatican to investigate the death of a young nun in Romania and confront a malevolent force in the form of a demonic nun.
That's the Nun.
It's the Nun. Yeah, it's the Nun, guys.
The Nun, bro. What, real quick.
Bruh. Directed by Corin Hardy, starring Demian Bishir, Taissa. Sure. Yes. Farmiga.
Or Farmiga, even.
Yeah, sure. Jonas Blockett and Bonnie Ahrens. That's the only one I can say properly. Blockett.
Yes.
Yeah. Now you got Frenchies. Yeah. Or Frenches.
Yeah. Frenchie, yeah. Mm-hmm. Bonnie Ahrens plays the nun. Yeah.
It
looks the fucking part. Sorry, that's really cool.
I know, right?
But yeah, he looks the part.
What made me pick this?
Yes.
Might as well finish off the fucking show movies I've been watching for this world.
Are you saying if you didn't have the AMC thing, you...
No. No, I was going to watch it anyways. I kind of hyped over... Since the, what's it called?
Conjuring 2.
Conjuring 2, yeah. Mm. So what do we have in between Conjuring 2 and
So this? It seems like you're a fan of the Conjuring stuff.
I like the Conjuring movies, yeah. Even at their worst,
yeah.
It's been entertaining.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say that before The Nun came out, their worst was Annabelle, and it wasn't bad.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't that bad. Anyway.
Right, but this beats it.
Animal Creation, though, pretty good. I like that more.
I like Animal Creation.
That's the one with the creepy girls
in the barn, right?
It still hasn't meet... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Still hasn't meet the awesomeness of the first Conjuring, in my opinion. Yeah. But otherwise, pretty good series.
I still like The Conjuring 2 a lot.
Pretty good series.
I think The Conjuring 2 and Annabelle Creations are kind of up there.
Yeah, I agree.
Conjuring 1 is still the first. Better.
What's your experience with these movies?
I have not seen a single one of these movies.
Oh, okay.
Not even The Conjuring?
Nope.
No, you're missing out. Conjuring is a really good movie.
It's really, really good.
It's a really good movie.
Conjuring 2?
Nope.
Conjuring 3?
Nope.
There's no Conjuring 3.
That's how we know.
All right. Annabelle? Do you like creepy dolls?
I've never seen it.
Annabelle Creations?
No. Like, I didn't know this movie was even tied into anything else.
Oh, really? You didn't? So, oh, perfect question. I'm sorry to spoil that now that we said it, but
I was
when you saw The Nun, you saw it, by the way.
Yes, I saw The Nun.
Yeah, I made sure he saw it. I made sure he saw it.
I was there.
Good, yeah. Because he went to my store the other day, and he was like, I don't know if we're going to pick something different from the, like, no, I saw that movie. I'm making all of you guys watch it. Anyway, so not knowing that about, you know, about all these other movies, watching them, did it make you feel like it was coming from something? Did it feel like it was heavy-handed in some stuff? They're like, why is it talking? Kind of,
I mean, the beginning was kind of like, it kind of like...
Oh, I missed
like,
the first 5 minutes, by the way. I don't know.
Oh, so you pulled a me.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay. So the first 5 minutes, it starts off with the Warrens, or the, what's it called?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And it's them talking about the whole painting thing, and the beginning of the thing when they paint, and then was a painting, and that heard the nun coming to life, right, and like being around or whatever.
Okay.
And then they explain something, and then they go back to time and travel.
Was that weird for you, that opening?
Yeah, it was just, I'm like, oh, this is probably a part of some other series that I don't know.
I thought
of
you.
No.
Wow. Okay, well, you're in a movie podcast.
You're starting at the worst movie out of the series for me.
Yeah, you are starting at the ground.
I watch these horror movies because they're so stupid.
Only this one.
Only
is
this
dumb,
one. This one's really dumb.
This one's at the tone, so I don't think I'm watching the rest of them.
I'm just saying.
We'll sit down, buddy. We'll hold hands and watch The Conjuring together.
Yeah.
You can give me like an old like 80s slasher flick. That's cool. Give me fucking.
It's like meeting the Blue Ranger first. No, you haven't met the Green one yet.
He'd be ecstatic to meet the Blue Ranger first.
Oh, because he's a nerd.
Mm.
Shut up.
And four eyes.
Shut up.
Billy. Wow, I remember that. All right, nerd. So that's cool. What did you think, Luke, of this movie?
It was a steaming pile of shit.
Steaming. Awesome.
Like, I saw stink lines and everything.
Yeah. This is going to be a fun review.
I mean, is there any movie I could care less about this year? This is it.
That's an interesting... I should look at my Letterboxd. I'm sure there's another one I care less about, but...
Yeah, well, you watch a lot of bad movies.
I watch a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's going to be more bad ones for sure. Ralph, your opinions on this film?
Yeah, I definitely missed the mark for me as a horror movie, as a movie where I don't think they knew... They wanted to flush out a story for a character that we... I don't think we needed that much, that we didn't need... as much information from. Mm-hmm. I thought we already got a lot through the movies, even though we got very little through the other movies. And we ended up getting a story, and then we didn't get like the horror from it. Mm-hmm. I didn't find any parts very horrific for a horror movie for me.
Mm-hmm.
In comparison to their other world of
definitely,
these movies.
Definitely. This is like...
don't agree, Luke. You didn't see any of the other ones.
He's
like shaking his head, yes.
No, because there was something I was going to say. You're
right.
Oh, they flushed it? I'm like, yeah, they should have flushed it.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense.
Okay. Before I carry on here, I want to say real quick, kind of spoilers for all the other Conjuring-ass movies in general.
Yeah.
Just in general. Not that we're going to go in depth on everything. But, this movie, Mrs. Mark is the nicest way of putting it. Luke's way is the harshest way of putting it. But basically, I agree with both of you guys. It's badly made. A plot is nowhere and everywhere at the same time.
Like, could you care less about any of these people?
The power of a cross fluctuates in its potential. Like, sometimes it hurts a demon or something evil, and most times it doesn't. When does a cross work? When does it not? I don't understand. At least Fright Night had better rules. Fright Night had way better rules about a cross works. You have to believe in it. That's it. The cross works every time.
Maybe half of them were the belief went away.
I guess so. This
the holy
priest.
Water dried off.
Yeah, and they had good actors in it too. Usually the mark of these movies, the reason they're so successful, beyond the fact that they're horror movies for studios, is that they usually hire pretty good actors to pull off usually things they're not used to pulling off. In this case, Damien Bichir, who's not like known for horror movies, and you know,
I was just expecting him to swear. I was expecting him to swear the whole time.
Were you thinking of Weeds the whole time, Luke, when you saw him? Damien Bichir?
The
priest. Yeah, he plays the gang, the narc, not the narc, the cartel guy who marries and whatever.
Oh, the politician one?
Was he a politician? I thought he was just like a cartel leader guy.
I don't know. She fucked a lot of dudes in that one.
Yeah, she done did, yeah. And also, Mike, to your fucking mouth.
I don't recall him.
Okay. The reason I mention Weeds because I know that's one thing you've seen before. But he's been in a lot of things.
Hateful Eight.
Yeah, Hateful Eight, exactly.
That's what he would have done also.
Yeah.
Useless.
They have makeup on, okay?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. He's the every Mexican. Actor has makeup on.
He's the
on.
Mexican.
He's the one Mexican in the thing.
Oh, okay.
Now you got it? Okay.
Kind of.
Yes,
I just thought, like, I was expecting something, at least his role to be more competent. He's supposed to be, like, the expert, mm-hmm. and he falls for, like, the oldest tricks in the books.
Mm-hmm.
Like, falling in a graveyard.
Like, when you remember a corpse not, you know, being sitting up when it was lied down before, don't approach it.
Right.
Right? We had a discussion about that earlier today, actually.
We did.
Which reminded me of that, by the way. But regardless of that, the movie has not been not making money. These movies make money, of course. Everyone I know is either talking about watching it or have seen it.
Well, I think they're just...
Because it's fun, escapism, I guess.
Pardon my yawn. I think there's so much hype behind this movie. They've been announcing this since, I think, the first Conjuring movie. They've hinted towards a nun. They've shown, like...
The second one.
The second one, apologies. They hinted like the whole picture with with the nuns in it and in the background in the Annabelle movies. They hinted towards it
as a stinger. It came up.
They're like little stingers here and there.
Yeah.
And like at the end of one of the movies, they announced the nun thing. So it's like a lot of hype.
I didn't stay past the credits. Did you guys stay? Okay, we'll talk about that.
No, I didn't stay behind the credits.
Oh, you didn't. I just kind of left.
No, but there probably is something. I'm saying.
Fuck that.
These are like the Marvel movies for horror, basically.
This is
always connecting.
Oh, I'm sorry for the horror community then.
Thank you. Thank you. We do want better.
Is this like the Iron Man 3 of...
Yes, that's a good one. Or Thor 2 of The Conjuring. So here's the thing is that... wait, were you in the middle of a point, Raph?
No, I
okay.
finished.
Okay. So I'm just tired of sitting down. That's where we're all standing. Okay. Inside baseball. So this movie has something interesting going for it. It was hoping for a success. It's basically... The Nun is a spinoff. It's like when George Costanza or Kramer had their own spinoff shows after Seinfeld. Conjuring, the first Conjuring, yeah.
What Kramer show was that?
Well, it was the actor, but it was the comedian style of them that made them. The Michael Richards show and the fucking... Jesus, watch something. 90s. 90s.
Veep.
No, not Veep, although...
Just kidding.
That would be a good kind of example.
It would be, right?
So the first Conjuring... In it, the reason that movie was also awesome is because it introduced, in the middle of the movie, would introduce this doll. And it suddenly became a point and a plot in the movie when it wasn't at all before. But they did it in a creative way. They added to it. It's almost like multiple forces are fighting this couple that's so good at, you know, banishing them.
Right.
So that's what made that cool. So they're like, awesome. And people love the doll. People remember the doll so much. So they put that and they do a spinoff movie.
Right.
It does really great. They do a sequel. The sequel's actually better. And somehow it succeeded. All right, then. Now we move on to Conjuring 2. The thing they introduced there is this nun photo portrait, right? And then it's so successful. They do a really great effect of like bleeding into reality of the...
They do.
Such a cool effect. I'll watch that forever. It's great.
Yeah.
And
it's
then,
still creepy.
It's still creepy. Obviously, that's the one thing they remember most, audiences, I mean, from Conjuring 2. So they do a spinoff of it here. Except that this time they massively failed. I don't think they had a story... The way they even had a story with Annabelle. Like, with Annabelle, at least they had a background thing in the first movie to, you know, kind of start from.
Right.
This one had nothing. They, like, it was just, what's a scary place? Romania, what's a scary time? This century, you know, like...
The 50s?
Is that... Whatever.
It was the 50s.
And Romania probably was a really horrible time.
Yeah.
But
probably still, like, in the 1820s.
But it was just awful. And everything is so purposely uneven. It felt like we were in, like, a very cheesy haunted place that you go to, or maybe an expensive haunted mansion that you go to during Halloween season. And, like, who has that many Armagh graves? Who? Why?
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 Also.
In so many classes.
How you as a nun
how
get convinced to go there?
Yeah, how can anyone be convinced to go there? The movie's very
I think it's
strange.
Like a missionary assignment thing, like with the Mormons. They don't really tell you. You don't get to choose. They just tell you, hey, go here.
Not Romania. Not Romania.
Fuck! I did not my face.
Isn't that the opening of the Book of Mormon when they're like wanting to go somewhere else and they get sent to Africa?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's like, not Africa. No. He's like Disney World.
Yeah, he wants like a... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so... What else do you not enjoy, did you not like about the movie, Luke?
Oh, let's see, the predictable jump scare, so the pan scare. Which was
oh my gosh, like, so there many. It is, bro. There's there it so is. Many pan scares in the opening when the sister dies or the one commits to whatever that happened there, and there's so many. Every time the camera turns back, you know it's gonna be right there. It's so bad.
Fucking crap.
It's actually like it's actually worse than predicting a jump scare because a jump scare lasts a second or two. A pan scare is like 10 seconds of your life gone. It's just gone. You know, it's like three times longer, right? I agree with that. Anything else we want to say before we get into a little bit of spoilers of the movie?
You mean we're actually just things to spoil?
Yes.
Oh fuck.
So me. I just thought that as the movie progressed, I was like, okay, we're not doing that many jump scares. Okay, we're not doing this. Okay, let's see where we're going. We're gonna get into the meat and the potatoes of the movie, and we didn't get there. That's how I felt going to the movie because I was watching it and I was like, okay, we're not doing the super obvious stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, they're like, okay, we have some random like levity moments with like the body movements, and then they go like, well, I didn't leave it like that, Father, and we shouldn't touch it. And the Frenchie's being the funny guy. And I'm like,
oh no, he tried. He was not successful to me.
No, I'm saying, moment of supposed levity. Yes. Isn't supposed to be there, right? And you're like, okay, but there's no like, there wasn't any jump scares. There is those pan things, the pan scares, right? But you're like, okay, we're getting those out of the way so we can actually get to some horror.
Yeah.
And we never get there.
Yeah, and also, I think the movie made a huge mistake trying to bring levity those moments of laughter when. It shouldn't have tried at all because trying made it seem like it needed it when it didn't, and then it failed when it tried and made it worse. Like it just so double wrong there.
Right.
I do want to talk about some things and spoilers. So let's get into it right now. Spoilers for The Nun starting right now.
We need to pray now. And whatever happens, whatever you may see or hear, keep your eyes forward and don't stop praying.
Holy hand grenade.
Holy fuck.
Dang, this movie I was gonna say that.
Sucked. Spoiler alert.
The holy hand grenade of Antioch. By the way, that's a one and done deal.
Oh,
and
by the way,
Gandalf made a cameo. He's all like busted with the crusade. He's all like, "You shall not pass, demon."
Wow,
that was so fucking Gandalf.
Yeah,
so
it was Gandalf.
When I saw the holy hand grenade,
yeah,
okay, I immediately looked at Luke and I was like, "Holy hand grenade, holy hand grenade." Started laughing. Just like,
yeah, that's the only part I laughed, and the movie, and I'm sure and it wasn't a joke. I'm pretty sure it wasn't a joke. Yeah. That's the only part I cracked up, and that's because I'm way funnier movies referencing it.
Exactly,
Yeah. It's really bad, guys. Also, it reinforces this thing where the movie doesn't know what rules to follow about fighting demons or fighting devils or fighting possessed people or haunted people, whatever the problem is, because it looks like it's a scattershot of a little everything, right?
It is.
It's this evil coming out of this weird place. By the way, how does a World War II bomb stop it or make it come out more? That doesn't make any sense. It does not explain that at all.
Just a crack in the cement and bam, demons.
Though, as Luke put this when we were watching the movie, always blame it on the Nazis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It feels like the movie is retrofitting that in there, and it's ridiculous. It's so bad, and it doesn't make any sense. And it breaks the rules that it tries to cement over the larger Conjuring universe or movies.
I agree.
And it's a testament of failure in that way. And Across, like I said earlier, Across will hurt a demon 1 minute and not hurt it another. I don't understand why.
Yeah.
But if it's made out of fire and it's on the ground, it means more? Like it's a cross.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, what's interesting is that I think 90... This is like... I want to think this is what the movie was doing.
Mm-hmm.
90% of the whole... Everything they saw was all visions. Because
funny if they wake up she's we've been roofied.
She's no, because there's only the one demon.
Yes,
And it's all visions that they're seeing,
yeah.
right? And then whenever like they actually get attacked or whatever, mm-hmm. she's actually there to attack them.
Yeah.
So in those moments. But for the most part, it's just visions and it's just them being tricked to see what they're seeing, right?
Yeah, my first thought of that was when the priest saw that kid.
Yeah.
That he failed that
exactly,
one time.
Exactly.
Yeah, I thought that was my first thought of that.
Well, that they kind of explain it with when she's in the actual covenant.
Yeah.
With all the nuns. And they're all talking to her and everything, and they're like, "Oh, I'm here praying with the nuns," and they're like, they're with the sisters, and they're like, "There's nobody here."
Yeah,
like, what are you talking about? And she's like, "Oh shit, she's basically been hoodwinked the whole time."
Yeah,
kind of like let her guard down while she's there, you know,
yeah.
Luring her to a sense of false safety, right? So that's like that, so that led me to believe that okay, maybe everything they're seeing is just fake, right? It's just in their head, and maybe that's why stuff isn't working. But like that's a reach. That's
it is a reach, and the
that's
movie
a big reach. And
doesn't
way,
really pay that
exactly.
off.
Exactly, it doesn't pay
so
off.
I don't think it knows what
no,
it's saying.
It doesn't exactly. Yeah. I'm not defending the movie. Yeah. But
that would have been cool though if that was like a
but
legit
like,
thing.
Literally, if had they explained that, mm-hmm. I think you wouldn't have as much problems with this mm-hmm. movie as you are now.
No, I wouldn't.
Right.
And even if it had that awesome ending, for example, like
it's like that simple thing where like you're in space and
yeah.
we explain why everyone's walking in the spaceship and not floating in the air. Mm-hmm. We say, well, thank God that guy invented the anti-grav thing.
About that. Thank you for
right,
smoking
exactly.
line. Yeah,
yeah. The thank
okay.
you for smoking thing. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
like and then boom, throwaway line. We're done and
yeah.
we fucking walk right on through this fucking thing.
Yeah, exactly. We can do sprints now on space.
Yeah, exactly.
So spoilers for Animal Creation, and one of my favorite things about that movie beyond the acting and some of the scenes and that stuff, it's not like it was a great movie, but it has a pow of an ending where I don't know if you remember the very ending of Animal Creation. All these movies, especially the non-Conjuring type, the spin-offs, they all have to relate to something that everyone recognizes from the Conjuring movies in a way, right?
Right.
And the Animal Creation ends with that little girl growing up and being that crazy person that kills a couple next door from the original Annabelle owners from the original movie, which was like from the original Conjuring.
Yeah.
All that connection stuff. And that was like a really cool, smart, not like overly smart, but it was a clever way yeah. to put that in there.
Clever, yeah.
This movie tries to do that with this Frenchie guy, and it's not clever at all.
Nope.
And we didn't care, and no one remembers some offhand, you know, shaky cam exorcism from the first film.
Yeah.
That they had that suspended. What did you think of that?
I was gonna ask, like, did that like part go into any
it's from
of
the
first other
movie.
Movies?
It's from the first movie. Yeah.
Okay.
When they're describing the realities of possession and stuff to like a bunch of students. One other thing, geez, are you gonna fight him or not, Tussie? that's fine by me. That's right.
Anyways, uh-huh.
The one other thing is that Thaisa Farmiga, obviously daughter of Vera Farmiga, who plays the Lady Warren from the movies. I don't know if you recognize that, Ralph. Do you recognize her?
No.
They look the same. But yeah, same actress.
They did look similar.
Yeah, right, exactly. Anyway,
it does make sense.
I mean, they're related, not same actress.
Right.
Do you think that they're doing a thing where this Sister Irene is actually...
Oh, no.
That's why I went against
spoilers. Interesting. I don't know, I guess.
I mean, she did take her vows, but, I mean, she could easily just stop being a nun, or that's why she has so much power, maybe, because
yeah.
she has a gift for it.
Yeah.
You think that's the original Warren? That's the Warren that we know from the Conjuring movies?
What, is she 18 in the 50s?
I mean, I'm just saying. Yeah, because...
I guess.
Conjuring 2 took place in the 80s, right? Or am I wrong? Right? It all takes place in the 70s, 80s, Raph. So it makes...
I don't recall the time.
Well, I don't even see the movies. Not really asking you. But why would you stop? Why would you? I'm going to punch you in the face right now because you know why.
Yeah. So that actually, oh my God, that would make sense. That would make sense though. Because all this stuff does take place in the 80s. They're already kind of older. They already have kids or a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess I can see that.
So I think that's what they're doing. I just want to talk about it now. Do you think it's possible? Do you want that to happen?
It is possible, and I could care less.
Yeah, because in the 70s,
but
80s.
But I wouldn't mind. So my thing is, I thought this Romania thing with the nun mm-hmm. was like back in the 1800s.
No.
Not in the 1950s.
Yeah.
50s.
So, yeah. I thought it was way before that, yeah.
Yeah, we don't know. That is our review of the nun, unless someone has anything to say. That isn't Luke.
No, it's just a disappointment.
It sucked. Don't see it.
No, it was a disappointment to watch because, like I said, it was a lot of hype, at least for me. And I think that the movies did a lot of hype for it too, even though it was like kind of subtle things.
Yeah.
Especially that last Conjuring movie, I think it did a lot of good hype for the movie. Like, we're excited for this nun who's supposed
yeah.
to be this very, very powerful foe.
I guess.
And it's yeah. like, how are you still there, or even the presence of her, the image of her, mm-hmm. even though she's been eradicated in this movie. That really kind of puzzled me about this. That's another thing that I hate about this movie.
Yeah.
She's supposed to be eradicated already, right?
Yeah.
She's held back, but I don't she's know. Still... Like, how is she...
It's like
why is she still something yeah, if she's gone already in this movie?
I don't know. Maybe just an aspect exactly. of it. Who knows? It's not explained.
In The Nun 2, Frenchie will come back with a bomb, and he's going to set it off in the chapel.
The Nunning.
The Nun 2.
The Nunning. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll review our second film of the evening, which is what, Ruff?
Yes.
Which is what, Luke?
Borg versus McEnroe?
Nope, it's the other one.
Not a 50-50 shot.
We're going to be searching. We're going to be searching for something. And what we call searching, stay with us.
Searching.
911, what's your emergency?
I'm calling to report a missing person.
Okay, who is this regarding?
My daughter.
I'm the detective assigned to your daughter's case. I need to know how everything unfolded.
Understood.
I think we're gonna go late, all night.
One, after a study session, Margot didn't return home.
Margot Kim? School has her marked as absent today.
Two, she didn't attend school on Friday.
My daughter is in a lesson with you right now?
Margot canceled her classes 6 months ago.
And three, she's been transferring funds for the last 6 months. We'll handle the ground investigation. But as a parent, you can help us with who your daughter talks to. Is that something you can do?
Yes.
After his 16-year-old daughter goes missing, a desperate father breaks into her laptop to look for clues to find her. The movie we are reviewing is called Searching, starring John Cho, Deborah Messing, Joseph Lee, and Michelle La.
La Michelle.
Also with Sarah Son, and a bunch of little kid versions of the main girl. Written and directed by Anish Shaganti. So I don't know what she's done or he's done.
It's a he, I think.
Yeah, it's a he. Oh, yeah. This is the guy who did this quick introduction in the movie, beginning of the movie. He's done short stuff. So this is his first big one.
Yes, we're reviewing. Actually, it's funny because The Nun had also a first timer, or like a guy who's only done like one other like small movie.
Yeah, well,
oh, surprisingly, that was such a well-made movie.
So I actually, you know how I am about trailers, but I saw a trailer for this movie. This is why I ended up picking it. I've never seen a movie of this kind of avoided all of them, as Oscar put it before, how it was his best of its kind, as in like. It takes place in the computer screen most of the time, or
yes,
or phone screen, or whatever. Mm-hmm. I've never actually seen a movie like that before, all right. like that, done completely like that. The closest I've seen to that is the what's that really colorful movie where they're doing like you have to do like crazy dares or whatever to get
money?
Oh
man, it's like a one word thing, right?
Yeah.
Nerf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nerf. I like that. Nerve. Yeah.
Did you say
Machine Gun Kelly?
Did you say Machine Gun? I thought I heard that.
Wasn't that the guy in the movie that you hated so much? The blonde guy?
I think it was MGK.
Is that MGK?
Yeah.
I hate that fucking guy.
Anyways.
So does Eminem, apparently.
Okay. Yeah.
That's great.
Shots fired. That being said, Searching, I'll go with first impressions, and then I'll throw it to Luke, and then Oscar. Mm-hmm. So, first impressions of the movie, I was actually... quite impressed with the style of the movie. I thought I was gonna hate it because I was like, oh man, I'm gonna basically look at my computer screen the whole time, which is just fucking tabs and shit everywhere open and a bunch of craziness. But it worked out and it did it smart. I enjoyed it. I don't think the browser history works exactly like that, the searching wise, because
maybe you can customize it that way.
No. I'll tell you why a little later.
Okay.
But there's like one little hiccup towards the end that I found out.
Okay.
That should have been different, but that's besides the point. That being said, I enjoyed it. I thought it was well made. Even the last like quick, red herring twist, I guess. Yeah, the last twist of the movie.
Oh no, there's red herrings.
I didn't necessarily need it. Mm-hmm. I felt it was forced upon. That's probably one of the bigger downsides of the movie for me, mm-hmm. If I have to pick on something. But overall, success of a movie on my end. Oscar, you are going last. So, Luke, what are your thoughts?
there have been, I think, two other movies that have kind of had the same.
Yeah, Oscar's seen them.
Yes, I have.
And I don't recall the names, but I know what it was like. It's like Security Footage.
No, it's called Open Windows.
There we go. Yeah, that was a good one.
It's Nacho Vigalondo's third film or something, the guy who did that time travel movie, fucked up Time Crimes. You did that movie. Mm-hmm. That we saw that one with Elijah Wood, I think. And
yes, Elijah Wood.
That porn star.
Gandalf.
That porn star. What's her name?
Frodo. Porn star?
Porn star is also in it. Sasha something? Sasha Gray. Sasha Gray is in it.
From Entourage.
From porn.
Entourage, yeah.
From porn.
No. From porn. She had a movie career,
because I didn't see it as a clip. I didn't say porn star.
From the Girlfriend Experience also. Anyway, then the other movie is Unfriended, which came out like a couple years ago.
Yeah, that one looked like a piece of shit, so I didn't see it.
It's not. It's actually pretty fun.
Oh, okay. Well, then.
I mean, to you, it would probably be a piece of shit. But not to me. Okay, yeah, those are the two that I know. I'm sure there are others, but I haven't seen them.
Yeah.
So...
No, bro, I did enjoy the movie. I like how it all went to the same places. Like, you know, that's pretty much what I would do. How to get a password, everything, like, redone and everything.
That was good. Yeah.
So that was kind of scary how easy that was.
Yeah, unless you're smart and use, like, different authentication methods.
Yeah.
Well, also, like, I think if the mother hadn't started her Facebook, the kid's Facebook in the beginning, and hadn't put her information down in the opening,
it would have been downhill.
It would have been, right, that would have been dead end for him.
Exactly.
Early on.
Yeah. It wasn't Facebook, it was the Yahoo Mail.
But sorry, yeah, whatever it was.
But it's okay.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Although I did get this vibe, like, the whole time we're watching this movie, we're actually, like, the NSA agent assigned to spy and the family.
Oh, so that's a nice way to think about it.
It did feel like that a little bit.
We're just watching them do their webcams.
I didn't think of that.
I wonder if this is going to unfold.
Yeah, I did feel like that a little bit.
Oh, my God. It's almost like the movie should have opened like that, like a case file. Like, he's, like he's doing the area. Where are they in San Francisco, right?
They're in, like, the Bay Area. San Jose.
San Jose.
San Jose. Okay. San something.
I was supposed to look up that area because, honestly, I think I might have driven through there.
Oh, at
when I was in California.
We've been there, right, Ralph? When we were kids, I think.
Yes, we have. Yeah.
I think we have been.
Did you guys cross the border, right? Jump the fence?
No, we didn't come from that side. That side, that's like a peninsula of Mexico. We don't come from that side.
Excuse me one second.
Yeah, he totally panicked. He dropped his phone and everything.
Yeah,
the white guy panics. Huh?
No.
Yes. Well.
We're wall jumpers, not swimmers.
Right. Anything else? Anything else to add in that first impressions look or anything like that?
No. I did really like how it went and how it did everything, and it brought back some XP memories.
Oh my God, Windows XP. Yeah.
Oh, dude. Yeah, even I know that. Yeah. even I recognize it. Like, oh, this is old school, and it did. So I want to talk about the opening a little bit, which will mirror exactly what I think about the movie. Is that the opening? I don't want to say it's the best part. It's the part that worked for me the best. But I won't say the best part because usually when people say, like, oh, the opening is the best, I mean, it's all downhill from there. Not quite like that. But it is my favorite part because it has, like, an up from the animated Pixar film, up feeling, where the opening is the emotional heart that sets up the entirety of the movie, like where the characters are and why they get in their situations, why the plot thickens the way it does, why the conflict exists. It's because of that opening, which is how their mother, their wife,
passes.
I forget what the disease was. Was it just cancer? Or was it
lymphoma?
Lymphoma.
That's what they said.
Yeah, he researches it in the thing. And the movie is really clever about using search engines and typings, like how people type or start finding out about a subject they don't know anything about, to like already knowing the subject and typing in something more specifically. From the very opening alone, but also as the movie progresses, it's really cool and clever. It doesn't shine a light on it. It doesn't make it like super obvious to you. It's just there, and you can just tell by like noticing it. So I would say that the medium, whatever, there's got to be a new name for it. It's like found footage, right? What is the version of this movie called?
Spy footage,
whatever.
NSA footage, FBI footage.
I really like how you said that because that makes it all darker.
It does.
Like, it really makes it. I really like that because it makes it like a voyeuristic horror movie almost.
Like imagine it's like the agent, like your first day is assigned to this family,
right?
And you've been watching them all this time,
and you're like, should we help? I'm like, no.
It's like, but I know the answer.
I know the answer.
It's like, I know. I triangulated everyone that was through the cell phone in the region at this time. I know who was there. It's the cops.
Oh yeah, that's right. So that's funny. It's just a really cool spin on it. I like that a lot. Yeah. Besides that darker angle, I really loved it, and I really loved the opening. Like I said, it does the emotional thing just right. I'm like, God damn you, movie. God damn you. But anything else on the medium or this weird style of filmmaking that we want to approach this? I assume we don't want to watch a lot of these movies, right?
It's going to get played out pretty fast.
That's what we said.
They're using Linux. It's Ubuntu.
That's what we said about found footage movies. And there was a hell of a boon on that shit. From Cloverfield to Blair Witch to Wreck. Those are three good examples, by the way. But there's so many more that are not good examples. Yeah. So, and they still make them today, just not as much. Is that a fear we're expecting, you think? Or something positive or negative?
I think yes. I think we're liable to get something else with this movie doing it very well. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think we just need to incorporate it. I just don't want you to make the same movie again, basically.
Yeah. No, definitely. I would not want that. So what do you think of the case of this missing daughter and shit? I mean,
okay, can I say one thing real quick? So yes. In my theater, I had a mother and son behind us, and I don't know if did you hear them at all?
Oh my God, they wouldn't shut the fuck up.
They wouldn't shut the fuck up. First of all,
you could tell them to shut the fuck up. You know,
they wouldn't shut the fuck up. But one of their things was funny, and it was,
I know what you're about to
okay,
say.
Okay, so the dad searching through things and getting like the passwords resets, and she's like, by the way, at this point, I would have never found you because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing with computers. That's exactly what she says to her son. And the son's just like, eh, like whatever, right?
Yeah.
But it was just really funny because she's like, I would have not been able to help out with your case because I'm fucking lost technologically.
My God.
And I was just like, damn.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Well, a lot of parents are like that for sure. Yeah. And but the great thing also about the very streamlined element of this movie is that it tells you that this dad is very inclusive, knows about that kind of stuff, because he starts the fucking Windows thing in the opening of the movie, and he's figuring things out, and he's setting up things for the family, calendar, pictures,
folders. They're telling you he's not dumb.
Right. At least about computers.
He knows how to use a computer.
Exactly. They're telling you that. They're telling you also he knows how to use a computer. He knows what he's doing. And he knows...
He has a tech job, too.
He does have a tech job.
Oh, does he? I don't know what he was doing.
Well,
he was using tech to do a job, but I don't know if he was a tech job.
The moment you have to use tech to do a job...
I'm just saying, I don't know.
You're pretty much in a tech job.
Okay. Well, they don't explain much of it, but they that's fine. We didn't need that information. What do you think of this case, though? The case itself, the mystery of it all. This movie plays uses this subgenre medium, right? It's Windows, whatever, to tell a thriller story, a missing person story. How did you guys feel like it did?
I think it was really good. And whenever it had to like go to news footage or like, you know, it had to do what it had to do, but it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed. I was really wondering what they were going to do for those moments.
Like later on.
Because they're like, there's no way we're not just in his room the whole time or on his phone walking. You know, he's like showing
things. One scene where he used his spy cams, actual spy cams.
Yeah, that was interesting. That was an interesting
use. Can't wait to get to there.
But I did like that there was a footage. It was either recordings of somebody doing it, right? It was recordings of it. It was YouTube, right?
Yes.
It was live footage. It was only live footage. They didn't use anything like this is something that we on TV from before. Mm-hmm. Everything was as live as possible, right? And even the recording that we did have of him like when he was fighting somebody later on in the movie that we'd have to explain to him later is he's watching it. So it's live for us.
Yes.
Even though it's not, it already was recorded. So that it still pans out.
Yeah, it does surprisingly pan out.
It still works out.
Every time you think, like, no way, it could work.
And it still works out.
Sometimes it barely squeaks by. Other times it really runs with it well.
Exactly. So I did like that. I did like that aspect of it. And I also, I kind of was afraid, like, what were you going to do? Yeah, and all of it worked out though.
The mystery holds up for everyone. Like, were you interested in the daughter finding out more about her, like he did?
What I really liked is that I felt like he was human, in his searches. He wasn't like he was still missing things, and I felt like you would pick up somebody who's like in it to win it, right?
Yeah,
would pick up on certain things, and I'm glad that he did pick up on it because when I picked up on something, he would go back to it. And I'd be like, oh, shit. So he's actually paying attention, too.
Right.
He's not just dumb guy, you know.
Getting lucky.
Getting lucky, exactly. And then even when Luke picked up, before I could pick up on one of the what's it called?
One of the threads.
On one of the threads, yeah. What's it called? I literally like a second before he, but he fucking said it out loud. The bastard. What's it called? The father picks up on it also. Mm-hmm. And like he just never, like it's, like, he's always on. And it's smart because like you would think you would always be on also. Yeah. And you are on during the movie. You're focused. So you would think, why wouldn't he be focused, you know? So it's interesting. So the movie in that aspect does it really well. Does a really good job.
I agree. Also, I think the movie does a very good job keeping it all very entertaining and like just enough. It gives you information that isn't useless, but also gives you information for future red herrings in the film. So you don't know what to believe in exactly or what will be the truth as to what happened to this girl. But everything is cemented pretty well. Before any of that happens. And there are little things, too, that obviously we'll talk more later if we want to get into that. But the movie does a really good job of keeping the mystery going, but keeping the mystery realistic and believable overall. And I will say it has one key scene that I have to get into spoilers, unfortunately, that I think the movie should have done a turn if it wanted to be even better than it is.
Do you guys want to get into spoilers now? Because I think we're
about to. One more thing to mention is that one amazing thing this movie has, probably the best thing about it, is that it gives you an insight into John Cho's character, the dad's mind, every time he's responding to a text or an email, where he starts typing out what he really wants to say and then deletes it and edits it, right? Something we all do all the time. Ugh. Instead of okay, we want to say
like that long ass paragraph,
right? Oh yeah, typing when his daughter goes missing, yeah. Right? Exactly, and you start finding out about like what mountains and shit,
yeah.
And exactly, I think that says a lot about what he's thinking in a smart way of not putting a voiceover, yeah, or not doing some other trick, because it isn't a trick, because we all do that,
right?
And it's a very human way to show us what he's thinking, and it's really cool.
Yeah,
it's a really cool way to use this subgenre,
by the way,
thing
real quick before we get, yeah, to spoilers.
Yes.
Oh, you know what, no, when we get into spoilers I'll say it.
Okay, then let's do that right now.
Oh, well, the other thing I was gonna say, oh, yes, is, I like how you had that one little flip when it became public that she was like missing.
Mm-hmm.
And like everyone in social media is like, oh, prayer and thingy. Oh, yeah. And even that one girl, she's all like, oh, she's my best friend. Like, oh, bitch, you didn't even know who she was.
Yeah, that's what she said. The study group girl, whatever. Yeah. And the memes about him, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Father of the year.
Father, yeah, it was awful.
Yeah.
It makes you feel extra awful because you see those from other scandals, right?
Yeah.
In your newsfeed and Facebook, right? And then, of course, it correlates. So now we'll get into spoilers for our searching starting now.
I'm Margo.
I haven't been able to reach Margo. When was the last time you saw her?
The study group only went till 9.
Hey, I think we're gonna go late.
No, she definitely left at 9.
I'm Margo.
Did she mention anything unusual? Was she acting strange?
I'm Margo.
Where are you?
She's been transferring funds for the last 6 months.
I'm Margo.
We found blood in the vehicle.
How did David respond?
These problems usually start in the household.
Mr. Kim, is everything okay?
Everything is great. Margot and I are...
She had cash in her car.
You felt bad about everything.
She was my best friend.
Oh, my God.
Told me she ran away!
I didn't know her. I didn't know my daughter.
All right, so what are we going to say?
Okay. I would... That garbage would still be waiting for her to throw away.
You still didn't throw the garbage. Really, Dad? Exactly. Really? Uh-huh. Yep. Really?
Gotta teach those kids responsibility.
Gotta teach them fucking responsibility.
You know what? I guess that's where I differ. I would just let that go that time.
Yeah, just that time.
You had a rough week. I don't know. You kind of blew up your phone about it already. You kind of blew up her phone about it already.
Yes, you did. You did. You did. You made it a big point earlier in the movie.
Yes, so, stick to your guns.
So the point that I was going to say that the movie should have shifted is, I'll give you even an example, perfect example. You guys have seen Chronicle, right?
Yeah, the kids with the abilities.
Kids with the...
Oh, Poor Man's X-Men, yeah.
Poor Man's X-Men, but really good movie. Okay. At least I think so. Chronicles is a found footage movie that, that, in my opinion, succeeded much in the same way Searching succeeds as a... open windows thing, whatever you call it. There's a point in that movie where one of the four main characters dies after the main character turns basically evil, right? That the movie cuts to, and from there on, if the movie had resorted back to not a found footage movie and went straight to like a normal movie like that, like a just traditional made movie, it would have been awesome, because then they would have like opened the gates to what they could show, how more expansive you could be. Because up until then, it was a great found footage movie. But after that, I had to make excuses to use the found footage angle to finish the movie.
Yeah.
Right? That's how I feel. You guys know the scene I'm talking about?
I think I do.
Okay. This one is when they're doing the searching for the thing, and they go into the news thing. And I think it was right around the rain that they should have, like, there's a perfect cut in the movie. I forget exactly how it happens. I saw it like 4 days ago. And but there's a perfect cut there in searching where you could have cut it there, and you can use like actual be out there searching for her in the woods. Like it would have, if the movie transitioned right then and there, I think the audience would have been like blown away by the experience suddenly of watching a traditional movie. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if you guys feel about that, but I feel like it would have been a perfect time.
I think that scene is when he's pleading to everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when he's pleading to everybody, and he doesn't know what to do with the camera. He doesn't know what to do with the camera, and he kind of just, like, smiles at the very end. Like, please, if you could lend a hand, please help. Yeah. And then he's like, thank you. Like, and he just, like, smiles because like, he doesn't know what the fuck else to do.
Yes.
That part. Maybe. I think that's the part you were talking about.
I think so, too.
Because right after that, the next scene is it's pouring rain.
Yeah, it's pouring rain. Also, you know, then we start getting to the red herrings of the brother and shit like that. Do you guys, don't have to agree with me, but you guys see where I'm coming from on that? I think after that, the movie starts making excuses. Yeah, because they're making excuses, you know, with the spy cam and all this other stuff to continue
them. You know,
Devin,
that was a stretch with the spy cam.
Yeah, that was a stretch. I know it was. Like, I liked that scene, and it made me feel for it. Like, oh, shit, that the brother, you know, like, I was in it in the moment, but it was a stretch.
Yeah, I agree. You
know? So that like, is I feel a, like that the movie would have been awesome. Like, really, really good if it just, like, detached itself from that was what it was doing.
Yeah.
But that brother was a cool red herring, though, and then that was foreshadowed by the pot that you see him in.
Yeah, at the beginning, making the gumbo.
That was great.
Which is like, how are you going to start making something without a recipe?
Right, and I don't know. Maybe he knows parts of it. I've never made gumbo before, though, so I don't know. Because
he was probably high.
Because he was high as fuck, Luke.
Yeah. Bless you.
Yeah, but that was cool, because I was thinking just the dark thoughts that the dad was thinking.
Like,
when
oh, man, he's
I'm like, oh, bro.
Well,
like,
it does look like that in the
and
text.
And my first thought was like, oh, yeah, most kidnappings and murders are made by the family members or someone they know.
They are.
I'm like, that makes sense. Fuck. You know? And, yeah. I was also like, what did you guys feel about the ending and how it turned out? I know Roth has a very specific point of view. Before we get to that one, what do you think? How it led up to the mystery, how
like
solving
the
it.
Real ending?
Yeah, the real answer.
That was... Yeah. I mean, she... Do we want to see what the real ending is?
Yeah, spoilers.
Okay, so in a nutshell.
Well, you don't want to spoil it as well?
The detective.
That's extra spoilers.
Well, the detective who at first was assigned to the case, the father thought.
No, you know from the beginning that she volunteered for it.
No, at first it was assigned. It might seem like she was assigned the case.
She says, I was assigned to your case.
And then.
Oh, that's right.
You find out that she actually volunteered to
the case. She calls him, yes. I'm assigned to your case.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
That's right.
So we find out that her degenerate son, who would rip off neighbors when he was younger, claiming to, you know
the foreshadowing money. When
right.
She tells that story. Yeah.
And, you know, she like defended his actions and saying, nope, that there's an actual charity like that.
A policeman's charity, yeah.
So this little fucking delinquent was like...
Tell us what you really think about it.
Yeah. Spent like 6 months catfishing this girl.
I think his name was Luke in the movie, too.
Yeah.
He was catfishing this girl for like 6 months under the pretense that she was like some waitress with family member who had cancer and trying to like extort money.
Yes.
And was I don't think he was trying to extort money.
I think it happened that way. He couldn't
he couldn't lie himself out of it.
Yeah.
And then was gonna like
he was just trying to like what's it called? He was just trying to make a connection with her. Because the mom had died from cancer.
Right, exactly. And just trying to be connected to it. Like, I work hard, and I have a job and school and all this stuff. Yeah.
Well, anyway, he was going to come clean.
Yeah.
Didn't go as planned.
Nope.
Attacked. They fought. Threw her 50 feet down a ravine.
Yeah.
And then told his mom. Mom was like, I'm going to cover this shit up.
So, yeah. So what did you think about that?
That was kind of crazy.
Crazy good, crazy bad?
I'm still mixed on it. I'm mixed. Honestly, I think it went a little too far-fetched. Mm-hmm. I kind of liked the beginning the most of the movie because it seemed real. Mm-hmm. Like what the parent would do, how he would act in the situation. But then at that point, it kind of got a little crazy.
It did get a little far-fetched. I believe I'm with you on that. Also, the part that stretched my thing was that probably the most intense scene this movie could have shown us, it would never show us because there was no FaceTime screen of the daughter being thrown down the ravine. You know what I'm saying? Like, if the movie had gone a different route and at that second part and then shown us that as a flashback or whatever, it would have been a more powerful thing than just Deborah Messing telling us over a FaceTime video. Like, the power of this movie, or the gimmick of the movie, undercuts what happened to her when the dad finds out. You know what I'm saying? It undercuts it because we're being told through a phone call. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that's the part where this gimmick doesn't work for the movie. You know what I'm saying?
You mean when she's being interrogated?
Yeah, when she's telling that whole thing.
It's not a phone call. It's a
video interrogation thing.
Exactly,
whatever.
Yeah.
Sorry. The whole movie is like a phone call. Yeah. But yeah, you know what I mean. Like, I think it diminishes that by not, you know, being able to expand more than that. You know, that's how I feel. But I feel like I wanted more. That's my point. Yeah? No? Nobody?
No, I get you. No. Yeah. It loved you. You kind of want, I mean, the movie kind of shows you everything. In a sense, you know, so it kind of left that out. So I could see you wanting more.
Yeah. What about you, Ralph?
The very ending?
Whatever you want. We were just talking about the ending, right?
So what do I think of it? I thought it was a little bit much. I thought we got like multiple endings in this movie.
Also, I think it seemed like this movie took more, it was like 5 days.
Yeah, it also felt like it took a lot longer.
Yeah, I thought
it was a lot longer, too.
I felt like we were, like, 2 weeks gone or something.
I thought it was, like, a month or something, dude.
Not a month, but, yeah, a while. Yeah. Maybe because you just never slept.
Maybe it felt probably that way, yeah.
Yeah, that and Yeah, it took a while. What else? But I also felt like there was just, like, we had two endings in the movie. Because she's dead, and we accept that she's dead.
Yes. This is the hoodwink.
This is the hoodwink that we get pulled over. And then I almost feel like it was too convenient that the burial service that he uses has a live stream.
Oh, my God, yeah.
That's another stretchy part. Like, not to say that it doesn't exist, but...
Not to say that it doesn't exist. That's fine,
but
right?
But
it was a very stretchy thing. Yeah. I would have preferred it almost had we had someone recording.
Yes.
That would have been almost better. Or had we had, like, the news there, because the news was that big of a deal that the news was already involved and we might as well take the funeral, you know.
Yeah, but I think they wanted us to... I know the movie wanted its cake, so to speak, in it too, where they wanted him to walk in and stare at her at the pew.
Now, I don't find the very end, though, how it happened with the video thing. Mm-hmm. I kind of forgive it for it because out of all the pieces, that's the only not live part. In the movie.
Oh. You give
that's
forgive
a,
it because
that's a recording already.
Yeah.
And that's already happened.
So that's an NSA file.
So the thing is, no. So that's what's going on right there is live. But everything she's saying is everything's already happened. Right? And then right after that, it cuts to like real life, right? Or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like all together. And it's like still the scenes or whatever. But it's she's talking about stuff that's already happened. And we're kind of alluding to all the... Like, they kind of, like, add audio clips to it, right? Mm-hmm. Or, like, memories into the mix of her confession.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the phone call from her son. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, you would not get that because it would...
Right, but we're adding, like, we're mixing those things as it's happening. So that's why I almost forgive that scene.
Okay.
But I did like it overall.
Oh, no, I didn't hate it either. Yeah.
Overall, I did like it. I really liked when they were explaining, like, oh, well... You know, because you're like, go step by step on what happened. And he does, right? And he explains the whole thing. And then he's like, yeah. And then when the dad is like, you know, like they're like, well, she wasn't going to be alive anymore because like, there's like a couple red herrings there. Like, well, she's not going to be alive anymore because she would have needed to survive 5 days without water, and you wouldn't have been able to survive 5 days without water.
Yeah.
And then the dad reminds him that it only needs 2 days of water because of the big rain.
Yeah.
And that's when you realize the movie is only taking place in 5 days.
Yeah. And I'm like, wait, what?
Well, that's I felt the same way. Yes. I was like, motherfucker, I thought it was weeks.
Yes.
And I was like, I thought this bitch should have been dead a long time ago.
Yeah. So. It's almost like Paranormal Activity at least gave you the timestamp of the camera sometimes.
Right, yeah.
So you know what day it was or how long it's been. Or,
yeah, yeah, exactly. That's what I think, like 24 hours since disappeared.
Right, right.
48 hours.
Yeah, but overall, it's a fun, entertaining movie. I do think that the movie wanted too much of a happy ending. I think it was kind of unrealistic to let her live that way. But I get it. They want a happy ending. That's the only way to make it happy, guys.
Yeah, it did kind of force it for the happy ending.
I understand. And our audiences, I guess, ultimately relate to a happy ending
but
more.
But then again, it still left some closure to be needed.
Oh, every movie. Oh, my God.
It's the first thing said after the movie.
You should have.
First thing.
They should have refreshed that screen one more time, but instead of saying pending, it should have accepted.
What was pending exactly? What was
her acceptance into
some music school?
And then you wanted to see her graduate, right?
Because well, Searching 2, yeah, the sequel.
The Searching. Any last thoughts, Ralph? We clearly know Luke's.
Or Searched.
It's a powerful scene. I go with powerful scenes in this movie. When he goes and confronts the brother. Yes. We kind of talked about it, but we don't come back to it. I'll come back to it. Which is, he does a whole spy cam thing. He sets up three cameras in the... and he names it Proof, right? Yeah. And you know that he's getting proof that it's that he's getting the murder or whatever, and he ends up ignoring the person this is another red herring in the movie, who supposedly killed the daughter, right? That they caught, because that's what she's calling, and he's ignoring the phone calls,
because
he's in the middle of confronting his brother, and his brother calls him out on his shit. They're like, you came over here with the intention of what's it called, accusing me.
Yeah,
of accusing me, like, what kind of a brother are you? Like, you're talking to me about what kind of a brother am I for hooking up your daughter with fucking weed, right? But I was also her like venting source, right? I was like being an uncle to her. I was being just a really cool uncle to her, basically.
Yeah, smoke weed.
Yeah, smoke weed.
He probably knows that she broadcasts on that fake YouTube site.
UCast.
I mean, he probably has talked about it, but he's like probably still doesn't know what it is. But you know, that being said, he kind of calls it the dad. Like, why wouldn't you like, almost like, why wouldn't you just come up and confront me? Like, I'm your brother. Like, kind of shit. Like, and he forgives him for it because you almost have to forgive the guy because he's at his like. How do you not?
Right.
Like, I wouldn't be mad if you came up to me like that. Yeah. I would be mad at you at the moment, but overall, I'd be like, this guy probably hasn't slept in like a week. You know, a bunch of other shit's going on. You know, missing a family. Like, yeah, so that's crazy. So.
Daughter's not going to piano anymore. What
and
the fuck?
He kind of like hinted at the beginning when they first talk, like, do you really know what's going on with her?
Yeah, he does. He does kind of hint at it. Yeah.
Yeah, so, the movie does a good job of cementing everything.
He wanted to tell the dad, like, father, like, you know, you got to talk to her. You got to find out what's really going on
with
her.
And also, you also get this. The movie does a good job of kind of leading us to believe that they're either fixed relationship wise after the mother. Mm-hmm. We don't know if it could be either way, right? Either they're good and they're copacetic, like they've moved on with their lives, or they're not and they're just, you know, burying their feelings and they never talk about it.
Yeah.
And obviously you find out through the movie that they've just been burying their feelings and they never talk about it. Because every time he brings it up, even like your mom would have been proud, he deletes that the first time.
There's that UCast, whatever.
That UCast one where he comes in and he's like, oh, it's The Voice tonight, remember? And he totally wanted to say, it's your mom's birthday.
Yeah.
Today. We should celebrate and, you know, we should remember her.
Yeah.
And you know she's waiting for that. She almost wants him to be like, yes, please, let's talk about it. Although, but nobody brings it up.
That was a good one.
Back to the UCast thing, you know, when the father logged onto it and started like casting. And Fish and Chips like pops on as oh fuck, and pops right off.
Yeah.
Imagine what that guy was feeling at the moment.
Oh yeah, like the ghost of this girl.
Like, is she alive?
Right, she alive. Yeah, the other point of view of that would be fine. You could almost see like a nice short film of the Fish and Chips through that side. You know, like a 5-minute short film of that. Going through all the videos, making the thing, and then like, oh fuck, who is he? Oh shit, he knows about us and they're freaking out.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. All right, so that's our review of Searching. Unless somebody has anything else.
Nope.
Cool. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review our last film of the evening, which is going to be, is it Borg versus McEnroe?
Yes.
McEnroe.
Andrew.
Find out what that's about. Unless you're a big tennis fan. Stay with us.
It's the perfect rivalry. The baseline player and the net rusher.
Tennis är nog inte en idrott avsett för alla skikt i samhället.
Mr. Borg, how does it feel knowing you could make history if you win your fifth Wimbledon?
No special feelings. Just funny, bro.
The only thing standing between Borg and that record is you. You and Borg are as different as two people could possibly be.
Is he backstage or something? Is he like jump out of the cage?
McEnroe is the bigger talent, but playing Borg is like being hit by a sledgehammer.
The story of the 1980s tennis rivalry between the placid Bjorn Borg and the volatile John McEnroe.
McEnroe?
McEnroe.
McEnroe.
This is a movie starring Sverrir Gudnason, Shia LaBeouf, Stellan Skarsgård.
Name checked.
Tuva Novotny. What?
No, nothing. By the way, it's...
directed by Janusz Metz.
Janusz.
Written by Ronnie Sandal.
Yes, it is.
This is a biopic.
Yes. One of those strange biopics, a duo biopic.
Yes, a duo biopic.
Can I give you guys two examples of two recent duo biopics? Can you guys think of two recent?
Oh, Borg versus McEnroe.
Two recent stuff. Can you think of two?
Negative.
Rush.
Ooh, good one.
Rush and the chess one with Tobey Maguire.
When you say recent, I'm thinking like this year.
Don't be yourself. Be less like yourself and realize that recent means recent. Doesn't have to be this year. Are you kidding me?
Recent is like the last 5 years.
Yeah, something like that. Jesus.
When it comes to movies like this, you can't just say this year.
It's...
No, you can't do that. You can't do that. Okay.
What is the name of that chess one?
Yes, I think we went full circle already, right? Did Luke go first on one of them? I think he went in the first one, right?
In the
first
on the last one, I think.
No, I went first in the last review.
Oh, okay, then maybe it's my turn.
I think it is your turn. So, Oscar, Borg versus McEnroe, or McEnroe, what are your first impressions of this movie?
Pawn Sacrifice, Bobby Fischer.
I know what you meant.
Well, I was thinking the title. That's why I was trying to be crazy a little bit. So, so much like those movies... It's a lot of fun. I liked it. I think I'm starting to like this sort of rise of duo biopics, rivalry stuff. There's a documentary that came out about Truffaut and Hitchcock, Best of Enemies kind of thing, which is Gore Vidal. It's always like two people against each other in their medium, in their profession. It's been a lot of that lately. Not a lot, but enough to notice.
Well, there's those rivals. Those exist in real life, so it's not like it's, you know.
But they're treated as they treat them like dual biopics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's always about some big thing or an event of some sort.
Okay.
As far as those goes, these Borg versus McEnroe, it doesn't break the bank or anything, but it does provide a lot of entertainment out of this trio of film reviews we got today. This might be the most fun I had. The movies. It was fun to watch. It was entertaining. It was fun. And it was pretty good acting, I think, overall. I think it tried some stuff a little too hard. It didn't really work out for me. It is a little paint by numbers, but regardless, like, and if you know the history, the whole thing is shot down already. Like, if you know the outcome of the Wimbledon match of 1980, I forget what year it was. Is it 1980? Solid? Oh, okay. I like the idea of the rising star going against the stable star, right? The one who's been the champion and whatnot. So I very much enjoyed it. Not a lot to say about the biopic aspects yet, but I did enjoy it.
Okay, cool. Luke, what did you think?
I really liked the first half of the movie where it was really biopic-y, but then I wasn't too fond of the second half of the movie. And one of the main things I think is you have to be a tennis person to kind of understand some of the stuff that's going on.
You have to or you don't have to?
You have to.
Oh, okay.
So if you don't, you know, have any tennis background, you kind of might get lost.
You think so?
Yeah.
Do you think we have some tennis background that I didn't feel
two of you, yeah, I think, versus me.
versus you. But did you feel lost?
Yeah.
Okay. About what specifically?
There's like the terminology and stuff like that.
Like Law 15?
Yeah. I totally forgot all of that stuff.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So I felt like, you know, that was kind of like a little offsetting thing. It's like, I'm trying to watch this movie. I'm trying to see what's going on. But Rob had to explain to me how like the sets work, how, you know, and everything.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's very grueling.
Yeah. If you don't watch tennis, it is a little hard to tell you when they actually win a game. What's the difference between a game? What's the difference between the match? What's the difference between a set? Those are all three different terminologies. So the match is obviously the whole thing entirely. The game is the current game that you're playing, right? And then the set is the set of games, the set in the game. So you want to have you're supposed to win. It's first to two sets, first whoever wins the two sets.
Yes,
and that's how it works.
So. And they even had a tiebreaker in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And the movie is a big, obvious lead-up. Mm-hmm. You know where it's going to go.
Right.
Nothing is surprising about that. Not to say that we won't have a spoiler session, but it is, you know, spoiler to real life, I guess.
Right.
The movie is set up to say, like, these two guys are going to be against each other in the finals for the championship. And for McEnroe, he's the up-and-comer. He is the crass American.
Yeah.
He is the loud-mouthed asshole. That no one likes.
It's funny. Shia LaBeouf like played himself.
So the funny thing about this is that when I first started watching, I knew nothing about this movie, by the way. I didn't even know he was in it. I watched it, right? And I saw, when I first saw his face, Shia LaBeouf, I'm like, okay, he's going to be an asshole in this movie. First thought, I'm like, this character he's portraying, this real life actor or person, must have been known for being an asshole. And of course, the first time you see him on the tennis field, he's like swearing the umpire and God knows what he's saying, and I'm just freaking out. Yes, nailed it. Because, you know, you hire Shia LaBeouf for that, and he is pretty good at that kind of thing. But totally nailed that. I laughed at myself.
Well, I'll give my first impressions also, since you guys decided to ignore me.
It's okay.
I'm sorry about you, my wife.
That being said, I kind of agree with Luke. The first half is, I think, the better half of the movie. And just because we're leading up to a part that we know what happens, it's a weird thing for history movies. Obviously, if you don't know, you don't know. And it's not that bad also if you know the outcome of the scenario, mm-hmm. Of the situation. But I felt like I already knew it. I still liked how it played out. I just didn't really like the ending. I felt like the ending was just kind of ended abruptly. Or ended. And it was just like, oh, okay. And it's like they didn't know how to end it. What I did like, and I think what makes them like a good movie, a good biopic to make, is they were, although very different on how they put their lives together, right? They're very similar players. The difference is one, the American, was never told to tone himself down.
Oh, yeah, be like a robot, emotionless.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In comparison, he was actually quite the opposite. He was like, I need to, like, because, and there's a good part in the movie where he explains, and he's getting interviewed, and he's kind of like talking to the news people, the what's it called?
The reporters,
and they're like, well, what do you think about this? And with Borg and Bjorn and stuff like that, and he's like, talk about my tennis play. Don't talk about his. Like, we don't care about his. I just play tennis. Like, talk about me. Like, I'm the one playing tennis. And he's like, I give 100%. Like, I give everything. When I'm out there, it's all me. There's nothing else, right? And he doesn't know how to express himself any other way. So he has to, you know, swear and do everything he has to, because he literally puts everything he has out there.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing, but it just happens. So what's it called? That's just something that... That's a big difference, though, that between the Bjorn. Bjorn doesn't do that, you know?
Yeah.
He'd rather just let it eat at him, I guess. And he lets it out in the other way.
So, basically, if you guys prefer the first half of the movie, it's safe to say that the movie failed in keeping your attention, feeling the competition, like, you know? Cause
it's not that. It's just that, okay, they're playing a match, right? But I don't... It looks intense, yeah, I'll give them that, but I still don't know.
Well, for me,
it's not like a football game where I know, like, oh, there's 3 points.
For me, for me, the second half of the movie fails mainly because of the ending. Just they didn't know how to end it properly. To me, It just didn't feel like it was...
It was a safe ending. That's it. Like, oh, they see each other and call it quits.
Yeah, it was kind of like this weird thing, right? And they just ended it like that. I mean, I don't know if you wanted to go further into detail about their lives or just end it after the match, which is kind of what they did. It was weird. It felt abrupt, right? For what we just had a kind of crazy thing in their life, right? But the beginning was cool, the first half, because we're getting a lot of their backstory. And that's what's cool, because since you already know, I already know, because I already knew these two tennis players. Not that much, right? Because I didn't grow up watching them. But since I already knew that, I already kind of like went into, oh, I get to know more about their backstory. And that's why the first half was more interesting for me than the second half was.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the whole thing is too much of a whole. Like, it's there are some parts that are felt very some tropey stuff. Very, very much like a biopic film, biographical. In the first half, where, like, you know, the childhood stuff, and the movie clearly prefers to focus on Bjorn, and either that's a lack of information out of McEnroe, or because his life is much more boring or less interesting or too complicated to explain, that they decided to focus on Bjorn. And the reason for that I fail to figure out in this film, other than the fact that maybe the movie is tipping its hand as to who deserves to win that day on the final Wimbledon day, which is a strange way to direct a dual biopic. It feels like it's a single-year biopic with a sidekick biopic in it, you know. You guys get what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I totally understand. Borg was the more interesting guy, but I think,
well, the movie was more interesting than him. I mean,
oh, well, yeah. But I mean, I'm sure McKenna could have had some good stuff in there.
I'm sure.
It seems like he came out of like a nice privileged family type of situation.
I have no idea about that.
It seems like, because like how he talked to the umpire, he's like, oh, my father's gonna, you know, write to the committee about this. Just very had that sense of entitlement kind of with him.
But you know, to me, that's
whereas
funny.
I think McKenna, I mean, Borg came from like a more humble beginnings.
He did. Yeah. That much.
And he had to kind of like, you know, train himself, suppress himself to become the man he is. Whereas you have somebody that's really talented and McKenna's just like this loose cannon. But ideally, like, Borg needs to be this loose cannon too, but he's just bottling everything up. Then one day he's just going to go off and just beat the shit out of a hooker or something, you know?
That's funny that you got that, because what I understood, what I got from his thing is that his father was just like, running the show with him. Like, you know, there's plenty of examples of family-run athletes or mother running the athlete. You know, you go to the extremes of Manchurian Candidate, but you think of other examples.
Sure.
You know, a lot of those child models, right? Their mother's always the manager. Their mother's always the one in charge, right?
Yeah. So double dip. It's called double dipping.
I'm sure it's called a lot of things. And so I thought of that mainly. I didn't think that they were rich or anything. I thought that they were just okay. I never thought their class status.
He seemed like he came from affluent or something.
Maybe. I didn't notice it. So I don't know about that. But it's funny that you did think that. But yes, Bjorn did come from more humble beginnings.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just think there's a big difference also, because we don't have as much. I guess I think the movie kind of gets away with it, with showing more of Bjorn and less of McEnroe's past, or more in depth, since technically they look like they're the same age, but they're not. One's the rising star. Yeah. They are close. They're close to the same age. One just started way earlier. You know what I'm saying? So, like, Borg started at 18 or 16 or something.
One of the top guys when he was, like, 15 or 16.
Exactly. He started when he was 15. So, this, now that he's in it, he's already been in it
for 10 years.
For exactly 10 years or whatever. Yeah. And this guy's just starting, you know? So, we're catching one person leaving his while one's starting theirs.
Yeah.
So, that's why it's a little bit less to show. And more of McEnroe's story is after the Bjorn, because he made off their Borg. That's when he makes his name.
Almost. Well, since the movie isn't clear as to why it wanted to focus more on Bjorn, or specifically, you know, or less of McEnroe, since I'm not sure about why or the reasons to any of that, I feel like it's a shorthand or a way to kind of cheat around information they didn't have or know. When it's a biopic, is anything but realistic. It's just realistic of like the when it happened, the who. But you can't get the Shia LaBeouf is not acting like McEnroe. No way, unless McEnroe's there to do it. Like, right? So a biopic can only go so far. You don't. There's a lot of dramatizations to everyone's life in any biopic. Dewey Cox, The Walking Heart Story, is a perfect parody of those kind of things.
That's a good one.
Perfect. It's a perfect parody. And because all those movies feel the same for a reason, because they're dramatizing a life. Every life is different. They all should be different, but they're not really, you know? I feel like this movie could have done the extra legwork to put in equal parts to this, so that finale, the second half of the gang of the movie, would feel like an actual competition, feel like real stakes involved, instead of feeling like Bjorn should win and also will win. You know, that's how the movie is portraying it to be. That's how I felt throughout. So what I'm saying is that both parts felt roughly the same. Not that they were bad, you know what I'm saying, but like they were equally the same. They were equally entertaining, entertaining and as flawed to me as the other half, I guess.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I don't know. It's not easy or anything. It's not a great movie or anything. It's like, I didn't know you had a doorbell. Well,
I have a doorbell.
It's okay. Yeah, I didn't even know you had one. It's a great day to discover that, though. Yeah. That's okay. Our listeners know we record in each other's houses and whatever. It's all fun and games. But what did you guys think of the tennis footage and the cinematography, the way that the movie was choosing the style of it, how it was depicting these people?
It actually made, well, when we're talking about the actual tennis play.
Yeah, the tennis play.
It kind of made it look a little interesting and cool.
It did? For you?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Did it for you?
Because, yeah, I think tennis is pretty damn boring.
Oh, you think? Oh, I think it's pretty cool.
I like tennis, so yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I did it in a stylistic way, so yeah.
Did you guys feel like I kind of wanted to see like a long shot of these two actors playing tennis?
Oh, that would be great, but you know damn well that wasn't going to happen.
Right, because how can you... It's only so much you can fake being a professional tennis player, right? You're an actor. You don't know.
LaBeouf actually did play as a kid.
No. I know. Shia LaBeouf is also like Christian Bale crazy. He would be into that role so much that he would probably do crazy things.
Making that shit up, though.
No, he is, though.
He's one of those method actors?
Yeah, right? a little.
Not full-blown.
Like Jared Leto, but not like light, though. Yeah. You know, or like he lets you light or whatever. But yeah, he has his own style for sure. That's why he's Shia LaBeouf. That's why he's known for all these things he's known for. But yeah, in the end, I low-key wanted at least like one signature long take shot of that. Mm. But that's okay. Other than that, though, it was pretty cinematic, cool dynamicism going on, fast-paced. It's not quite as bad as Prince of Tennis, but it's up there with something, you know. What did you guys think of the pacing in the movie? Did you guys want something in the movie that wasn't showing for you enough or at all? Like, did you guys like, why didn't they ABC? Or I wanted more of this or less of that.
I got nothing because I knew nothing about them, so.
Well, I know nothing either, but I still, you know, could want.
More
Swedish women. Oh, you like the Swedish, huh?
Who doesn't?
I mean, I don't particularly like
them. Well, I just felt like we should have seen more of, I guess, McEnroe's thoughts behind things, and not just because we get a lot of his, you get to see a lot of his emotions already out on the field. Mm-hmm. So in comparison to like trying to drag him out of fucking, you know, Bjorn, but it would have been cool to see more of his, I guess, his mentality, even though you kind of know where he's coming from, but just get a little bit more from him. That's the only thing I would have seen. I would have liked more.
One thing I did like about the movie that they didn't show enough of is the polarity between polarity. No, I'm not sure if that's the right word. It's the how the fans and even the commentators and critics and other tennis pros see Bjorn and how we know Bjorn to be according to the movie, which is like, I think that nightclub guy described him the best way when he's like a lot of people, they call him the glacial, but he's not. He's a volcano. He's waiting to explode because he does all these rituals and he's waiting to pop because he has that anger just like McEnroe does, as we saw in his flashbacks. So the movie does a really good job of showing you, like, although fans must think that he's like the stoic, wise tennis pro, right, who must know something, and he is always ready to explode, but he, you know, never shows an emotion. But he's actually more like McEnroe. I think I like that. I wish they did a little more to really put in that those differences a little more in there. I would have liked that more because that was cool. I like that because it's, you know, how you see a celebrity and how they are. are very different usually.
Yeah.
And this movie is kind of tackling that.
I almost felt like I just wanted to see him explode more, but I know that's not who he was.
If he did, the Stellan Skarsgård would leave.
Yeah, I guess so.
And the Skarsgård family are half the Swedish actors. So. I'm kidding, because there's just so many of them. They're like they're the Baldwins of Europe or whatever.
I guess.
Scandinavia.
Europe. All of Europe. I'm kidding. The Duplass brothers also. I guess those are my general sense. I think we skipped around too much. I think we already ruined. I mean, should we just not make a spoiler session?
What are you going to spoil?
This happened, 38 years ago? Fuck.
Look at you. Your math gets hard.
Just add your time with 80. I mean, not that hard to math it.
Yeah.
Okay. Nothing. No, I'm not saying that we have to. I'm just saying if there's something. I mean, you're right about the ending. I think that they should have extended some of the spoilers for history, I guess. But there is another Wimbledon competition in the pages of history, not in the movie, after this one.
Yeah.
Like the next year.
Where he beats.
And then McEnroe beats Bjorn.
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe they should have made the up to the third act being this movie, and then do the last act of showing him coming back.
Yeah, I guess they made it this because it was a big thing for if he were to get dethroned at that point in time. That's why the match was very important, because you have someone who they clearly, like, since the beginning, and they let it on the whole time, where the only rival he had was McEnroe, and before the Wimbledon even started, they were like, well, how's he going to go against McEnroe? And you're like, oh, well, like, let me get there first. Like,
yeah.
You know? And, you have, if he had he not won, he would have never been the record breaker for being the youngest person to do it 5 times in a row.
Yeah.
That's why it was a more important match there than the other time.
Okay. I can go with that. I did think of something else, though. That's not spoiler. Here's another downfall as to why they didn't show enough McEnroe for me is that remember how that one other character described the difference between both and tennis styles?
Yeah,
that Bjorn is the hammer. It's like a sledgehammer. He hits hard. He hits heavy. And they do a good movie. Does a good job of explaining that difference and how he does it and how he speeds up and shit, and his serves are crazy. But they say, and then when the guy describes McEnroe, he describes him as like he's a slicer, and that's also these like not tricksy things, but like these slider things where you're bleeding left and right from all these mistakes you're making. You don't know you're losing until you are.
Yeah.
And they did not do a good job of explaining his tennis play and his tennis style, I think, like they did Bjorn. You know what I'm saying?
I do agree with that.
So that's a fault, in my opinion.
I think like they also said like he's like the net rusher.
Yeah.
And like I didn't see much rushing.
I did see
You do see it, yeah.
I did see that.
Well, I don't know if I saw it. It'll explain it in tennis.
Well, there's a net in the middle, and he's running to it, so, you know.
Yeah.
You don't need to be a NASA engineer.
I don't know. Damn movie.
Wow. All right. I think that's all we have. What's it called again?
Borg
versus McEnroe.
This is like the worst title for you.
By the way, do you think Star Trek invented the Borg series from this guy because he's so stoic and emotionless?
Ooh. No, I think it was already out by then.
No, but he was a famous star before that. He was 15 when the Star Trek came out. When did the Borg come out?
Weren't the Borg introduced in Voyager?
Were they really?
No.
There was the one before that. It was Deep Nine.
Deep Space Nine?
Ask the Trekkie in the room.
I don't know. No one gets that joke, Rob. The listener will understand that very personal joke. I'm just curious because that's Borg. I mean, he acts like a Borg, kind of. That's the whole point.
I hear you.
The exaggeratedness of it. I can see some writer out there making that up. All right, so that is our review of Borg versus McEnroe. You have been listening to another movie podcast. You can always send feedback, and we always appreciate when you do, most times, to podmoviecast@gmail.com. You can find me personally on Twitter and on Letterboxd over at Armen Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ralph?
Yeah, you could follow me on Twitter at GamerRalph. That is with 2 R's and an F.
Luke Kipu.
At Slothmaster Luke.
Awesome. And Luke, you're choosing the next films.
Yes.
And we're starting a new marathon, the Spielbergo marathon.
Right.
So why don't you tell us those films?
I have them right here in front of me on a napkin, written in crayon.
I saw that you tweeted it too.
I did.
Awesome.
So we are going to go with the Netflix live Netflix original live action adaptation of Bleach.
Yeah. Didn't they do an Alchemy? What's that one?
Fullmetal Alchemist.
Fullmetal Alchemist. Yeah.
Not on Netflix, but I know they're doing live action. Anyway, then we go with White Boy Rick, another biopic.
Yeah, it is, I guess.
And then we go with the Spielberg's TV movie, Duel.
Yeah, so we didn't actually explain how we were going to show the marathons. We did that off air.
Chronologically?
We're going to just do chronologically. We're not going to go Roth and then Luke and then myself, anything like that. So we're just doing chronologically. Also, be a good way to see his progression, right, as a filmmaker. That'd be great to talk about.
Or regression.
True. True story. So Duel is first, which is one of my picks. I can't wait, which is 1970-something.
71, I want to say. 71. If not, 73. Okay. One of those two.
It is a TV movie. You can find it on YouTube, Ralph told me. You can just.
I saw it on YouTube last year. So.
You didn't pay for it, right?
Nah.
No.
1971.
1971, okay. So you might be able to find it on YouTube. If not, I'm sure you can find it available to rent somewhere. If not, maybe buy on Amazon if you're willing to join in on us.
Yeah, with there's us. Like a $21 DVD box set of Spielberg movies.
That's what you got it, right?
I got the Blu-ray version, yeah. So it's a little more.
I saw like a VHS copy of it a long time ago.
Still on there.
Still on there? Yep. Awesome. You can watch it on YouTube right now, guys. So that would be an easy watch. So check that out. Also, Bleach and White Boy Rick. Can't wait to check that out. Until then, guys, I am Oscar.
Ralph.
And Luke.
See you later.
Look, everything in this world is running exactly on schedule. Besides, to leave, we probably have to wait until the movie's over or something.
Well, when is that going to happen?